very much for coming today. I think I've heard some of the best presentations of the conference earlier today, so hopefully this will not disappoint. My name is Judina Talley-Sabino, and I'm the Diversity and Cultural Awareness Liaison at Lehigh Valley Health Network. And what I'd like to share with you today is our ecological approach to organizational cultural competence. We've heard a lot of presentations through this year's conference about addressing health disparities. A lot of those interventions, however, need to occur in an organization that supports those interventions. And what I'd like to share with you today is just some aspects of Lehigh Valley's journey in this regard. I'm by no means an expert. I've only been doing this aspect of work for a few years. But I often encounter colleagues or peers of mine in other organizations who remain frustrated. They're very passionate about the cause, but they don't know how to make it happen in their organization, or they run into roadblocks. And what I hope this presentation will do today is to just give you some tips or techniques that we've used at Lehigh Valley. Our journey has not been completely smooth. We have had our bumps in the road as well, but we also have found some things that work. I don't have any financial relationships to disclose, and I want to acknowledge my collaborators on this paper. Lehigh Valley Health Network is located in Middle Eastern Pennsylvania, about 50 miles north of Philadelphia and 80 miles east of New York City. And it's a very large academic community hospital, so we have a large teaching program. We have two hospitals that are located in three different locations, several health centers, physician offices, laboratory, pharmacy services, home health and hospice, and other ambulatory care. So we're a pretty dynamic organization. There's about 1,200 physicians and about 10,000 employees. So that just gives you a little bit of the scope or the environment in which this work is done. And the Lehigh Valley, two counties primarily, Lehigh and Northampton County, is a pretty diverse community. It's been a destination for immigrants since the mid-1800s because there are several industries in our area. However, we've seen some real demographic changes in the last several years as well. In the 2010 census, about one in four residents of those two counties is from a historically underrepresented group. And within the city of Allentown, which is the region's largest city, about 40% of its residents are Latino, and more than 50% are from a racial or ethnic minority. So Allentown is actually a minority-majority city. And so those are the folks that we're seeing in our health network. The rationale for cross-cultural health care, probably anybody could get up and talk about these, but I think it's always important to talk about why this is essential in health care. Certainly delivering cross-cultural care is at its core patient-centered. And it is essential for effective communication. Not only making sure that we have the language-appropriate services, but also understanding our patients' culture so that we can frame our message in a way that our patients will understand and that it's at the appropriate health literacy level. We know that health equity is a pillar of quality. The Institute of Medicine, in its 2001 report, Crossing the Quality Chasm, talked about health equity as one of those pillars, that there aren't differences in the outcomes of care by different groups of people. However, we also know that those differences or disparities exist. And there's also several accreditation or regulatory organizations, as well as those that offer recognition for hospitals. Lehigh Valley is a magnet hospital, and one of the criteria for being a magnet hospital is you have to demonstrate how you provide cross-cultural health care. And then, as we talked about health reform and accountable care, we can't be accountable for the care we provide if we do not take our patients' cultural and language needs into consideration. So these are just some of the rationale for the delivery of this kind of care. So what I'd like to talk to you today is really about an ecological approach or a coordinated system-wide approach. When I started doing this work a few years ago, one of my mentors, one of the folks that, of course, we brought in consultants to help us, was a gentleman named Ed Palleandro from Mount Sinai in New York, and he said, your goal is to get this into the pipes of your organization. Into the pipes. So it becomes the natural way that this, that care is provided here. And that has been our goal. And he suggested this ecological approach, which means don't be thinking about doing just one thing. You think about doing multiple things at the same time and taking advantage of opportunities that come along. So part of my job is being knowledgeable about cross-cultural healthcare, but part of my job is also being aware of all of those things that are happening in my health network and showing my colleagues how there's a cross-cultural link there. And in this way, our work becomes integrated and we avoid being the flavor of the month or yet again something extra that we're asking our clinicians to do, so that integration into existing activities. There are several organizational strategies that can be used to achieve this ecological approach, and I'm going to go through each of these one by one. One of the key strategies is taking advantage of transformational events. Now, sometimes these are planned events in which there's such a dramatic change in your organization that it's not the same again. So really, that's what a transformational event is. Sometimes they're unplanned events. And so keeping your eye open and your ears open for things that happen and how you can use them for organizational change. Our transformational event at Lehigh Valley happened 5 years ago. We had a patient-centered experience retreat where we had people from the hospital and health network as well as folks in the community. Some were former patients, their family members, and then community representatives. And we all came together to design the ideal patient experience. During this retreat, our community representatives, our former patients and families, said to us, here are lots of times that the care we got at Lehigh Valley was good, and here are times that our cultural and language needs were not met. The way they framed that message, it wasn't in a blaming way, but it was very frank. It touched our senior leaders so much more than I could have done by giving them the evidence, telling them about what other hospitals are doing. That was a transformational moment. And our senior leaders left that meeting and immediately came back and took action. A small group was put together. We did an organizational assessment and wrote a strategic plan for cultural competence that was endorsed by our senior leadership and became the first step in our journey. Sometimes, however, there's other kinds of transformational events. There could be a joint a call to the Joint Commission because a patient did not get language interpretation, or a call to the Department of Health because someone's culture and language needs weren't met. Those are terrible. Those can be pretty powerful transformational events. Something good can come out of that situation. And then being aware of any lever that you can use to change the organization. I have made a lot of use out of the new Joint Commission standards. As a person, I prefer the carrot over the stick. But sometimes it's the stick that will get noticed. So sometimes that can be your friend. And we have changed a lot of our organizational practices because of the new Joint Commission standards. So keeping your eye open for transformational events. And then, of course, nothing gets done in the organization unless leadership is engaged. How does this happen? Well, sometimes it's that transformational event. Sometimes it's just talking to different people who sit on your senior management councils. And although they may not be blatant about it, many of them are going to be advocates for this type of care. Talking with them, creating relationships with them, and having them advise you on how to frame your message in a way that their peers all around that senior management table will hear and understand. Aligning it with existing organizational priorities. One of the things that I think is the hard part of this work is it's yet again something more that clinicians have to do. However, in every single healthcare organization, they value patient safety. Aligning this work to patient safety or high quality care. Those are already pillars in your organization. They're already things that are valued. And then this just becomes woven into that work. A quick example of that is we have a patient safety newsletter that comes out a few times a year. We devoted one issue to cultural awareness and language competency. We have gotten more mileage out of this document because it became a required reading for our nursing staff, for other clinicians. Physicians actually got CME credit for reading it. Taking advantage of those kinds of things is really important. And then also accepting the fact that this is a journey. You know, we all know about the steps of cultural competence, and we're never going to be done. Sometimes on our journey, we can move really fast. And other times, our executive sponsors caution me about moving slowly. We've had discussions about whether education should be mandatory or not. Some of our education in our health network on cultural competence is mandatory. Others is not, because we don't necessarily always want to be forcing this down people's throats. We spent a lot of time coming up with our shared vision. And this was, what would our organization look like if everyone provided cross-cultural care? We asked people for feedback. We asked them what they thought the organization would look like. And then we culled all of that information down and we got it into our 30-second elevator speech. So do people know what an elevator speech is? So this is where you can tell your story about the work that you do in a very short period of time. This has been very successful for us, and we've helped our champions across the health network to use this so that they can advocate for us in the areas in which they work. As I mentioned, we did take time to do an organizational assessment. There are several tools that are available on the internet that you can use in your organizations. They're no cost. You just can use it. If anyone has trouble finding a list of these, my contact information is in the slides, and I'd be happy to direct you to those. That organizational assessment pointed out areas in which we were doing well, and we could use them as role models. And it also pointed out areas in which we could make some improvements, and that became the core of our strategic plan. Senior managers think in strategic plan ways. So by aligning our work or using that strategic plan framework, we got more buy-in from those executives. We had our executive team endorse the strategic plan, and that gave us a lot of mileage with managers in our organization who might have been a little bit reluctant to do this. So again, that balancing of the carrot and the stick. While I am the only person that has my role, we don't have a Center for Cultural Awareness at Lehigh Valley. You're looking at it. It's me. We have made that decision purposefully because we don't want my colleagues in the hospital to say, well, I don't need to worry about this because Judy will. I can't do that in our very large organization. So this becomes everyone's responsibility. I do, however, have the wonderful opportunity to work with 40 or 50 champions. These are people who publicly have come out and said, this is really important to me. I always take down the names of those people. When I finish an educational session, every time a few people will come up and say, this is why this is important to me, I keep their names. And then when we have to do an educational program or we develop something new, I call in those folks. And they'll say to me, well, why are you talking with me? And I'll say, well, do you remember last year when we did our session in your unit and you came up to me and told me this story? Then they're really engaged in our work. They also can make operational the things that we want to do in our strategic plan. And then, as I mentioned, our work came because of community feedback. And I have a network of colleagues outside in the community that help me to advocate as well. And when I have problems or questions, I call on them. We have a patient coming to the hospital next month who is from Burundi. She was burned and she's getting reconstructive surgery. She'll be staying at the family lodge that we have on site. And the family lodge director called me and said, I know we're going to have to use the telephone interpreter to talk with her and her family, but I would love to have a warm welcome when she and her mother arrive. Can you help me identify people who can help me with this? Well, we actually found folks in our community who are immigrants from Burundi. Three of them work at the hospital. Didn't know that. But we now have our warm welcome set up for when this young family arrives next month. outcome measurement and communication. One piece of advice I got when I started this work was to create a journal or to document your work. And at the time I thought, oh, of all the things I have to do. But this timeline has been so powerful for me and my organization because it has demonstrated all of our achievements. And things that I may not think of as a big achievement, I still put on the timeline. And it really illustrates the journey. Outcome measurement, of course, is really hard, and especially when you don't have staff, when you don't have an infrastructure for gathering it. But what we've become successful at is using existing data. So all of your organizations submit an annual report to the federal government about the diversity of your employees, the EEOC-1 report. I was able to get this from my human resource colleagues, and then I do just a one-page update every year that links those diversity metrics with our patients and with our community. And I use this to advocate for continuing to recruit and retain diverse employees. No collection of new data at all. Just using existing data. Another example of this is to begin to use equity measures. You already collect quality improvement data. Being able to stratify those data by race and ethnicity will give you a first look at where there's opportunities for improvement. I do an annual report every year and distribute it. Again, keeps this issue in front of especially stakeholders, but other champions in the network. Try to link with national initiatives, such as the rollout with the Joint Commission standards. I take advantage of doing conference presentations. This gets on the timeline and demonstrates that we're sharing our work with others in the community. And then, as difficult as it is to do publications or to write manuscripts, it's essential. And some of you may think I don't have anything to write about, but you actually do. If you just take a little bit of time and reflect on what your learnings have been, you can provide advice and guidance to someone else who's just starting on this journey. And I'd encourage you to do that. We've had some success in this area. What resources are available? I'm going to upload, when I get back to my office, on the APHA conference site where you could download the slides, I will put up a short case study that covers much of what I talked about today, so that would be available to you. And then these are just a few educational resources that I find helpful. The DiversityRx website, and you can just Google DiversityRx, talks a lot about cross-cultural healthcare. It's one of the best sites that I found. This morning we heard more about the Office of Minorities Health Think Cultural Health resources, also great site. And then the Joint Commission's roadmap for achieving effective communication, cultural competence, and patient and family-centered care. It's actually a PDF document. It's fantastic. So these are just a few of several resources that are out there. Yesterday I got a chance to go visit the new Martin Luther King Memorial here in D.C., I didn't want to leave before I had a chance to do that. It's very powerful. It was a very moving experience. And this is one of my favorite King quotes. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. This work really, really matters. And so I'd like to encourage all of you, if you're on this journey, to continue to pursue it. I hope some of these tips will be helpful in making your organization more ready for some of these changes. But I'd also just like to encourage just you personally that the work is really important and we need to keep going on it. Thank you very much.
Are there any questions for Ms. Sabino?
That's a great idea to add a few things to the web, to upload a few things that are just examples of things that we've done. I'd be happy to do that.
Provide absolutely everything. I mean, what mechanisms do you use to
One of the things, exactly. Sure. Where do you draw the line? Of course, we want to be able to provide all things to all people based on their cultural needs, but we won't be able to do everything. Where we are on our journey is getting people to ask the question, getting clinicians to actually ask the question. And I think sometimes it's the fear of, I don't want to ask this question because I'll be asked to do something that I won't be able to do. Where we are on our journey is just giving people the tools to use to how to ask the question. And I advocate using Jerry Ann Galante's The Four C's. I don't know if people know the 4C questions. So what do you call your problem? What do you think is happening? Where do you think caused it? What concerns might you have about it? And then, what other questions might you have? So try to make it very, very easy. And then telling them that even when patients make a request that you think is going to be sort of beyond that line, sometimes it isn't. A few years ago, we had a Native American couple. The husband was hospitalized. He needed gallbladder surgery. And so he asked if he could do smudging. Does anyone know what smudging is? So smudging is a cleansing ritual in which they burn sweetgrass and sage on a rock that they call a shell. So what do you think the nurses on the inpatient unit said? So like all kinds of red flags, Joint Commission, there's oxygen in the room, fire. But the nurses on that unit really didn't want to let it go. And so they figured out a way for this patient to do it in a conference room where there was not oxygen. And he wasn't so ill that he couldn't move to a different room to do the smudging. Well, he does it several times a day. He smudged the nurses. He smudged his surgeon. He smudged other patients. They felt better. He returned a few years later because he needed hernia surgery from a workplace incident, and he asked to go back to that unit because he knew he could blend his cultural belief, his spiritual beliefs, with the Western medicine care that he needed. And so we also tell that story a lot as, sometimes you can't make this happen.
Okay, thank you so much.